a lot of artists like myself, you know, we're always told you have to have something to fall back on, right? I don't know any other profession in the world that tells you that you have to prepare to fail.
Welcome to the Backyards of Key West podcast with your host, Mark Barato.
A show about local businesses, artists, musicians, and the stories behind them.
Welcome. I'm glad to have you here. I've got a lot of questions. I'm eager to learn about the things that you've learned. But before we get started, why don't you introduce yourself, what you do, and then we'll dive right in.
Thanks. My name is Krista Cloutier. I'm the working artist. I teach artists how to share and sell more art, basically.
Yes. And I love this because with me and my art, it's a little bit different. I started as a businessman. I've created a bunch of different businesses, sold some, been involved in some good exits of other companies, and had some failed businesses too. So that makes me businessman first, artist second. Most people in the art world are artists first, and business is an afterthought. Yes, they would like to make money, of course, selling their art, but that's not what they really want to do. They want to create, they want to be creative, they want to do all the things that find them the most amount of joy, which is the opposite of sitting behind a desk and punching numbers. Mm-hmm. So how did you, let's go back to your origin story. How did you get involved in the art world? And then I'm assuming you were fulfilling an itch that a lot of your contemporaries and yourself found when it come to the business part. So let's start with where you started and how you get to where you are now.
Okay, that's a great question. I went to art school, like a lot of your listeners. And when I graduated, I found myself in need, you know, of the quote unquote real job. And luckily, the real job that I found was working in an art studio. And it was a highly respected studio known internationally for the quality of the art that they did and the artists that they worked with. And I was kind of a glorified intern when I started. I was meant to be the intern to the sales manager, but it turned out that I had a real knack for selling art. And I didn't even know that until I started. But the art world is really about building relationships. And I could do that. Within a year, I was director of the whole company. And that was a job that I held for over a decade. So I was doing, in that position, I was doing everything any artist does. Because we were creating work in our studio with the artist, and my job was to sell that work. So I was cold calling galleries. I was, pitching collectors. I was selling to museums. I was contacting interior designers, corporate collections, licensors. And I had about, by the time I left, I had about 200 artists on my roster, and I was creating marketing plans for each of them. So we were, we specialized, you know, we worked a lot with big name artists, that's for sure. But what we were trying to do is use the money that we made from those big ticket items to introduce unknown and underrepresented artists to the marketplace. So I know what it's like to knock on doors and try to get a gallery to pay attention. When I had what I called my, well, now I call my midlife correction. At the time, it didn't look very graceful, but I decided that I needed to leave that position. I wanted to go back to doing something more creative. I didn't want to deal with art as a commodity anymore. I loved working with artists. I wanted to support the creative expression in any way I could and also support my own. Because as an art dealer representing so many artists, I didn't have time to come home at night and work on my own stuff. So I sold everything I owned. I moved to Europe to a place where nobody knew me. And I started life again. And I put together this course that I called The Working Artist. I started teaching it in person. I was living in the UK at the time, and I taught all around England, and would go back to the United States and teach. And then it just kept expanding. And then I decided to bring my program online. And now I've worked with artists in over 80 countries.
So wow. That's me. Yeah, I love that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I do have a lot of artists that are listeners, a lot of people in that world that don't know where to go and how to get started. You know, there's a couple of companies out there that you could tell they're not really backing the artists. It's more about, okay, I'm going to make money and I'm going to sell my course to make money, and not really, maybe even they not even had that much experience in the art world. But right. Because you are an artist, because you have been a director of a studio and did all the business aspects, is that where you felt, okay, I could really dive in and help people? Or was it just from your day to day in speaking with artists, you were like, wow, I'm able to fulfill a lot of their needs. Let me start this company where I can teach them how to be a successful artist. Like, what was that jump off point for you?
It wasn't a straight line. It actually started when I was working at the studio. I had a gallery as well, and I was super busy, like all the time. And like every single art dealer, I would get 100 emails every day from artists saying, you know, here's my stuff. Will you sell it? Will you represent me? And I was constantly having to say no to people. Mostly I just deleted them. Like, that's what most gallerists do, because it's overwhelming to be approached that way. And a lot of times people would just walk into the gallery unannounced, uninvited, have a portfolio and show me their stuff. And it would, you know, as an art dealer is really busy, and an art dealer also has a certain aesthetic. So when people come into your gallery and show you stuff that's nothing like what you sell, it shows a bit of disrespect that they haven't done their research and their homework to see if it's even a good match. They haven't supported you before they ask for your support. So that's what happened one day. I was running around the gallery. I had an opening that night. I was getting ready for a trip. I was super busy, really stressy. And this guy walked in and he had this portfolio, and I just thought, oh no. And he opened it up and he was showing stuff that was just not even close to my genre. And I turned him away. I said, you know, I'm sorry, we didn't even have an appointment. No, your stuff is lovely, but you have to go. And he packed it up and he started to head towards the door, but then he started to cry. And
wow.
Yeah, it really affected me. And I had him come back. I had him take the workout again. We looked at it again, but I was looking at it with new eyes now, because that was the first time that I realized that I didn't like thinking about art as commodity, that I was really interested in this human being who had something to say. And it just broke my heart. It really did. He asked me where he could go for help. And I started doing some research. I went to the library. I went to Amazon. I checked all the books. I checked, you know, online. And I didn't really see a lot there that impressed me. I didn't see anywhere that I could send him. And I decided that I was going to put something together for him. I created an outline of a book. And I also created the syllabus for a 9-week university course. I worked with the university to develop this course. And then I got busy again and I forgot all about it. And it wasn't probably another year, 6 months to a year before I had that, you know, midlife correction where I just sold everything and moved away. And when I got to Europe, it took me a while to find my feet. I got a job at a gallery. It was the biggest gallery in London. I mean, we're talking helicopter landing pad on the roof and two French chefs on staff.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of great art in Europe and a lot of old art, so I can imagine.
Yeah. So this was a major gallery, and I was in the big time. I didn't really want to be selling art again, but I didn't really know how to land on my feet. And the gallery owner went bankrupt, and he took us all down with him. And I ended up having to declare bankruptcy, which was devastating because I'd already sold everything I owned. And now I had, you know, I think they leave you with $178 when you go bankrupt.
Oh my God.
And I was just completely lost. And then my beloved mentor died and I didn't know what to do. And a friend who, I was crying on a friend's shoulder, and he said, "Why don't you teach artists?" And I said, "Teach them what?" And he said, "Teach them what you know about how to sell art. You have sold, you know, all over the world. And my files from being an art dealer are actually now housed in the American art, or in the Archive of American Art at the Smithsonian." So I was working on a really big level and I did know my stuff. And at first I thought, do artists really want to hear from me? And then the more I thought about it, I thought about all the times artists have asked me questions and I've really enjoyed helping them. So I decided to, you know, look in my computer to see what I had from my old life that I could use to cobble together some kind of course. And then I found this syllabus and I found this book outline and I'd already done it. It was like a gift. Yeah.
Amazing.
It was a gift. Yeah.
So you look and you find this. I mean, what a story. Talk about roller coaster of a life. You go to Europe to try to like, okay, I need to land on my feet. You start building yourself back up and then you get knocked back down again. I mean, it could have went a different way. So we're blessed that it went the right way where you said, all right, I'm going to put on my big girl pants again and do this all over again and pull myself out. But this time I'm going to go a different direction. And you're also blessed. You had a friend that kind of said, look, you know these things. You've been in the gallery world for so long. You've dealt with artists for so long. There's got to be a pattern, I'm assuming, that you could recognize here. And a lot of artists, like we started the show with, know a lot about their particular... They know how to... They have an emotion inside them. They know how to get that out. And they know how to put that as a medium on some sort of canvas or paper. Or something that they build, but that's as far as they go. And they needed help. And a lot of times for artists, the help that they think is the answer is I am going to cold call galleries and get my stuff into galleries. And then you realize when you're in a gallery, even if you are in there, that doesn't mean that your stuff is even going to be shown. Some galleries, if you're in 10 and you're in all over the country, some of them, the salespeople are like, listen, this artist isn't selling. Put him in the closet. Put in someone else to replace them. We need to sell. And you have to constantly do checks to see if your stuff is even being shown. So there's a lot of artists that don't have that direction. So you found the syllabus. You found the draft of what you were doing. How did you begin to refine this so that it could be in some sort of course that could be delivered online?
It took a while, and I'm going to go back for a second because I think a lot of artists like myself, you know, we're always told you have to have something to fall back on, right? I don't know any other profession in the world that tells you that you have to prepare to fail, but artists are constantly. And I really believe that artists need to fall forward. We need to fall into the struggle of it, because it is going to be a struggle. And we have to bloody our knees and wipe them off and get the Band-Aid and keep trying. When I took that job at the gallery in London, I already knew I didn't want to be a gallerist again, but I wanted something to fall back on. And I landed on my ass, right? So that was the universe telling me, no, you have to fall forward. So I did find this syllabus, and I had worked with artists in the studio for so long, I felt like I had a really good understanding of how to keep the attention of creative people. Because I had done that, you know, working with as many artists as I've worked with, it's like working with a herd of kittens sometimes. So I knew that I had to put this information together in a way that would be really engaging and would also be sticky, you know, something that they could come back to, something that they could comprehend and remember. So the first thing I did is I joined a networking group in my town in England, and I had these flyers made because I had asked a local gallery if I could teach a workshop there. And I handed out flyers at this networking group, and, you know, I lied through my teeth. I told everyone that I used to teach workshops all the time in America, and I'd never taught a workshop in my life. But I got three people in that first group, and they did really, really well. In fact, they got together after that, our day together, and they threw an exhibition for themselves. And one of the ladies in that group, who was 78 years old when she took that workshop, she sold 82 paintings in the first month after Wow. the course. Yeah. And she stayed in touch since then and keeps, you know, telling everyone that she was one of my first, she was my first working artist. And she still follows it and still sells well. So I knew that I was onto something the way that everyone was responding. And I didn't bring it online right away. I taught it in person for a long time, and I taught it all over the world because I wanted to capture every single question. And I wanted to make sure that different countries didn't work differently. But it Right. turns out that the art world is a world unto itself.
Yes.
So I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. When you put together this syllabus and then you're teaching it now live to this group of people, what are the main, like, give me some bullet points on how that course is, and then maybe how it differs to what it is now, because you have an artist and they could say, okay, I've sold some stuff at a local fair or farmer's market. Do you work with them on pricing, building a website, creating their social media? Like, give me some of the bullet points on what are the things that you taught that first time.
I taught, basically what I was doing was teaching artists how to write a business plan without using the word business plan and without telling them that was what we were going to do. And we also created all of the marketing materials. So we worked on, you know, an artist statement, a CV, a bio, just all, and then really creating a vision and a path forward. So I would share like all of the different avenues that an artist could sell, and touching on, you know, online marketing, websites, all of that, but then narrowing it down again into what they wanted to do, what would make the most sense for their work. So we weren't really, unless I'm working one-on-one with an artist, I can't really like go into every artist's personal practice. But I can share all the possibilities, and then I know the questions to ask to help them choose their own path, and a path that feels comfortable to them, with a plan that feels like it's something that they can execute.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I have a lot of artist friends that I work with just to help them, because I also print all of my own material. And because my art all starts as a photograph, and then I've created my own paintbrush tool within Photoshop, and then I hand paint over that photo digitally, and then I print on canvas. I have my own studio where I do my own Geek Light printing and stuff like that. So I'll work with a number of different artists and let them know that, okay, if you're an original oil painter and your pieces are $5,000 and say up, and you sell two of those a month, that's great. I mean, you're making a great living as an artist doing that. The problem is you have 24 customers in the course of a year, and in 10 years, you have 240. Wouldn't it be better if you can sell 150 pieces in a month, and then now you're getting in the thousands per year. And in a 10-year period, you're having tens of thousands of customers. Building the customer list is always the best because it's easier to resell to somebody who already is passionate about your art. And it's like, well, how do you go from selling two pieces to 150 or 100 pieces? Well, maybe you go and create some giclée prints of those original pieces. Maybe you sell some on paper. Maybe you sell some frame. Maybe you sell some on metal. Maybe you sell a limited run of reproduction because maybe somebody can't afford a $5,000 piece, but they can afford an $800 piece. And then maybe with that $800 piece, you could upcharge them and do some embellishment on that. And then those people that have an $800 piece and they're staring at it every day, as they age up financially, they then go, okay, I'm ready for that original. Whereas if they never could afford you from the beginning, maybe you're an afterthought. So a lot of these little techniques I would teach just to friends in the art world. Are those some of the things that you bring when you're educating them? Or is it more like, okay, you have original pieces. This is, and I hear that you want to get into more galleries and maybe you want to go to different shows around the country. These are the tactics to do. Is let me maybe shed some light on some examples, some broad examples. You know, we're not giving away the farm here, but just some broad examples on some of the things that you'd be helping navigate people in that direction.
Sure. I don't have a blanket strategy. I don't have a strategy that says, hey, you know, you've got five people buying here. Let's build that to 80 people. I mean, for some artists, that would be appropriate. And for other artists, it probably wouldn't. So it really depends on what their end game is, what they really want and what they're really comfortable doing. So for example, if an artist wants a gallery career, right? I would tell them to do their research, to research a gallery and to learn more about, you know, it's romance basically.
Yes. Yes.
Because you gallery also, relationships like interrupt. A marriage. No,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say not to interrupt for a second, but it's very much like you're like, look, buddy, I ran galleries for decades. I understand how people would come in and they did no research and all the things mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier. And then I'm going to tell them to go. No appointment set, the disrespect, all those things. You're able to bring them behind the curtain and go, look, this is what I would have wanted to see. This is what you should do to get in front of the right galleries to break into them and even have that person listen to you, I assume.
Yeah. And I do have a formula too for reaching out to any art world decision makers, gallery or not. My formula is if you could write a letter instead of an email, that would be great. But either way, start out, your first paragraph is a compliment. Everybody loves a compliment. And it yes. also means you've done some research. Your second paragraph is what do you have in common with them? Maybe they showed, you know, artwork by someone you went to college with. Maybe, you know, I once wrote to someone and I did my research and this woman had a Dalmatian. And I told her I had a Dalmatian too. And, you know, suddenly like there's something we have in common. That's what people are looking for. So you've complimented them. You've told them what you have in common. And then your third paragraph is your ask. And these paragraphs are very short because people are busy and they don't like to read. And so what do you want from them? You know, I would love to submit my work. You know, I'd love to come for a portfolio review, whatever it is. And then you tell them that you're going to follow up, tell them when, give them plenty of time. I recommend 2 or 3 weeks at least. And then do, because that's the most important step is following up.
What about if an artist were to come to you and they said, like, as a gallery owner or the director of a gallery, and they said, hey, and it was a good fit. It looks good. It's very similar to the style, but mm-hmm. they say, well, I have my own social media presence and I'm selling 20, 30 pieces a month. Original pieces on my own. Is that appealing to the gallery? Because you've almost vetted the fact that, okay, well, people like this person's art.
Yeah, I would say it would be appealing. I mean, too many artists come to me and they say, I want a gallery because I don't want to sell my own work. I'm not comfortable with that. So they either want a gallery or they tell me they want an agent. And the truth is that galleries and agents, and there are very few agents out there, but they're not looking to do the work for someone. They're looking for someone who already has an audience, who already is proven to be a good investment. They're looking for someone who has made the investment in themselves and isn't waiting for someone else to make the investment in them first.
Yeah. You know what it sounds like? There's such similarities to the music industry where it's the same broken dreams that a lot of people have. They just want to play music. They just want to write songs. They want to get an agent. They want to get a label. They want to do all these things. But it's a lot easier to get those things and to demand, say, a higher percentage to you if you're like, well, I've created my own music. I've created my own digital album. And I'm, you know, selling millions of downloads, or I have this many followers on my social media, then it's like, okay, we have someone that is going to, like in the music business, like in the art business, as a gallery, you want to say, okay, I want to make money for them and for me, and I want it to cost me the least amount of money. Well, if you have someone who's already have a proven success rate, that makes your job easier.
Absolutely. Yeah, you really have to take, you really have to believe in yourself first. I think a lot of the difficulties artists have is they feel like they need the world to validate them and to give them permission to step up onto that stage. But you have to validate yourself first, and yes, you have to take that your place on that stage.
And I also assume that in dealing with some artists out there, you're going to have some difficult conversations with them. I'm talking about students, where you're like, listen, where are you coming up with your pricing? Because I think that's a really big thing that a lot of artists have a problem with, is because they may say they're pulling this all arbitrary number out of a hat of my art is worth $5,000 and it's a 60 by 20 and it's printed on silk and it's got a floater frame and that's how much it's worth, but they haven't sold any. And it's like, where are you getting these numbers from? How are you thinking that you can sell at these prices? Like, it's got to be a difficult conversation for you to have.
It's incredibly difficult because way, way, way too often artists attach their self-worth to the monetary value that is ascribed to their art. They think it's a reflection of their talent. And they get really upset with me when I try to separate those two things, or when I tell them that their prices might be too high. There's two huge mistakes an artist can make. One of them is to overprice, and the other is to underprice. I'm certified as a fine arts appraiser. So I've worked for the U.S. government and I've worked for insurance companies valuing art. I really understand the art market and how art should be priced. And I do teach that in my workshop. It's about the market. It's not about the value of the work. It's about the market that you're selling in and what that market will bear and where you stand in relation to others in the same market at this point in time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you're going to have to ebb and flow sometimes based on what the economy is doing. Is there a recession looming? You know, if you're selling higher end, not super high end, right? When you're talking about the multi-million dollar collectibles, that's a whole different world. But right, if you're talking $5,000-$10,000 pieces, and right now the jobs market is crashing or the stock market is crashing, you know, that may be an item that people push off to another time. So I'm assuming you even have to talk to them about that, forecasting on what the generalized market is doing as well.
For sure. And one thing I stress is that you can lower your prices, but you really, really, really don't want to. That's why I always tell artists to start low and organically grow their market up. And the reason you don't want to lower your prices is because people have invested in you. And people who buy your art, they, I mean, 95% of the time, they buy it for emotional or aesthetic reasons. But there's also always that thought that they hope that this goes up in value. So part of your job is to protect the integrity of your prices. Now, what I tell artists is when there is a recession or something like that, something catastrophic that you can't control, and you find that you're priced out of the market, you have a very strong tool, and it's called a discount. You can always offer people a discount.
Right.
And people love discounts. They would much rather pay $800 for a $1,000 piece than $800 for an $800 piece.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And the artists could also, if they're doing oversized, massive pieces, they can also maybe, if they're into it, think of creating some smaller size pieces that are in different price ranges that they could keep in their portfolio forever. But I love that.
And prints. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And prints. So I love that aspect of, listen, you're not lowering your pricing. You're just discounting based on, sometimes it's based on time of year. Like for mm-hmm. me with my art, August, we're really slow here locally. It's a lot of slow in the category and price point that I'm selling. So I do discounts and deals for people. People love that. They don't feel that they're, you know, my art is less of a collectible, but they don't feel that they're, oh, something that they bought is now discounted. It's not. It's just for a temporary short period of time, you have the ability to collect more art at a better price.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so reverting back a little bit, when you started the course and then you did it in person and then now you're offering it online, how has it been going? What, like, do you, I'm assuming you feel the pressure of a need from artists desperately needing your services.
Yes, yes. That's one thing about, working with artists, that there's so much emotional attachment to our practices and our businesses. So I was really not prepared when I started the Working Artist Online to get so close to so many people all over the world and to really know their stories and feel their pain a lot, because it is really difficult.
Yes. Well, that person that started this whole thing for mm-hmm. you was crying as he was walking out of the gallery.
Exactly.
So it is emotional. It is their baby. It is sometimes a passion that they've had their whole life, and maybe were doing a desk job and finally decided enough's enough. They got laid off or they quit and they're going to follow their dream. And you're helping, like, birthing their child. You're sitting there helping them fulfill these dreams. So it's, for that, it's got to be so rewarding.
It's been an amazing ride. I brought the Working Artist Online 10 years ago. I did it through crowdfunding. I did a Kickstarter campaign, and artists from all over the world supported me, and I'm still so close to so many of them, and have really been a part of their story, and then so many other artists too. And I've learned a lot about working online since I started this. So it's been wonderful. And I offer, every artist who works with me is invited to a monthly coaching call, even after they've taken the course. So we've got, our monthly group includes people who took the course 10 years ago. And, you know, I've really gotten to know some of them personally. I've gone to visit some of them. Or they've come to visit me, and it's a wonderful community of artists. I couldn't be happier with the way, you know, I took that leap of faith when I left the art world and went out to the bigger world. And I really feel like it was a rocky landing, but I was caught.
Yeah, and they took a leap of faith in you too.
Yes.
And it's got to be amazing after 10 years in building this community where you're seeing someone who is maybe timid and doesn't believe in themselves to now being a successful artist. It's got to be, the reward has got to be, you know, getting high on that all the time.
Oh, you know, I've seen people go from homeless artists. I've worked with a couple people who were homeless, who now have, you know, there's a young woman in Thailand who was working in the rice paddies and she was homeless. And now she owns a beautiful home with a swimming pool and she's just published her first book. Another artist in England was going through a really rough time. He was homeless. His wife was ill because it was just such a sad story. And I actually gifted him The Working Artist. And I didn't know what happened to him, but a year later, that money showed up in my bank account. And now he's got a beautiful home. He's on his town council. He owns his own gallery. And it's so rewarding.
Wow, amazing. Okay, so the website is theworkingartist.com. Any other, like, what's your social media? How could other people get in touch with you?
My website is the best place. There's a place there to sign up for my email list. Mm-hmm. And I send out a lot of resources, a lot of free resources. I'm on, you know, all the socials, Facebook, The Working Artist Workshop, Krista Cloutier on Instagram. I have a YouTube channel, Krista Cloutier. And I just want to leave your listeners with a final thought, if that's okay.
Please,
and that is, this is really important for artists to hear, I think. Your art does not exist to support you. You exist to support your art.
Mm, I love that. That's perfect, because I always ask people at the end for a tip of the day, and you already gave it before.
It's my job. Yeah,
that's great. Okay, if you are a working artist, if you're thinking of becoming an artist, if you're a seasoned artist, if you own a gallery, if you own a studio, it doesn't matter. They need to reach out to you, check out your website, check out the socials, get as much of that free information as possible, begin to build a relationship with you. And then from there, you just never know where things could go. So having you in the world, having you as a person that can help navigate this tricky world of becoming an artist or starting a gallery or having a working studio. We don't have mentors. We don't have guides. Having someone like you is a blessing. So I thank you for being out there. I know my artist friends out there in the world will be thanking you hopefully soon by reaching out to you. It's just, it's definitely a beautiful thing that you're doing. And I could tell that you're doing it with a sense of passion, and it's coming from a place of wanting to give instead of wanting to get. And that always ends up hitting the mark and being very successful. So, Krista, thank you so much for being on the show and thank you for doing what you're doing.
Oh, I appreciate that, Mark. Thank you so much. And thank you for this platform and sharing me with your audience.
You got it. You got it. Thanks again. And thank you for listening, everybody. Mm-hmm.